Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. Pistachios are known for their protein power, fiber, and better-for-you unsaturated fats for a combination that may help you keep feeling fuller longer. Wonderful Pistachios is a good source of protein with zero guilt. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. I love that they come in a variety of sizes and flavors, making this the perfect protein snack for any on-the-go adventure. Check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Track Podcast. I'm Liv Ekpone, joined with Ashley Titchens. We had to push our show back a day. Ashley and I have been on the road for the last 2 days, grabbing some amazing content, which we're super excited for everyone to see. But Ashley, how are you feeling? Ashley's actually in full marathon training right now. I just want to throw that out there. So
I don't know if everyone needs to know that, me and my amateur pursuit of running a marathon, but I'm feeling okay, you know? Like you said, we were on the road getting some cool workout Wednesday shoots, actually. So that could be some more stuff to come with some of the top high schoolers in the country. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, great couple of last days. But as we talk about our show, we have a very special guest who broke a new collegiate record in the 1K over the weekend. We're going to recap the USA Track and Field Cross Country Championships. We're going to chat about some of the fast mile times that we saw at altitude. We're going to talk some pro talk, highlight some of the talents that are going to be going to the BU John Thomas Terrier Classic. Lots to unfold here. So without further ado, Ashley, who is our special guest for the day?
Yes, Liv, I know we're both very excited for this one. We're joined today by Tonona Matsatsa, who is a freshman at Georgetown, and he's from Maryland. And I'm pretty sure a lot of you already know this, but this weekend he broke the collegiate record in the 1K at the Hokie Invitational, 2:18.05. I know we're really excited to have Tonona, so thank you for joining us. So obviously you kicked off your freshman year already on a pretty high note. You're only, you know, about a month or so into indoor season and you break that NCAA men's 1K record. You know, how was that transition, do you think, from high school to college for you and then just getting off to such, you know, great start?
I think the transition was pretty smooth. I did come into college injured, like, over the summer. But when I started like running again, like late September, doing workouts like early October, I think the transition was pretty smooth and like training was going well and I haven't gotten hurt since. So.
Gotcha. What was that injury like? I guess if you don't mind elaborating on that.
Yeah, I had a disc hernia in my lower back for about like 2 months. I tried running on it for 2 weeks because I thought it would go away like pretty quickly, because it happened while I was playing like a different sport, but it didn't end up going away quickly. Then I got an MRI and then they were like, yeah, you can't run for like at least a month, and I was like, okay. And then of course it was more than okay, but it was definitely hard to take since I did want to do summer training, and I did have like one more race I wanted to do over the summer, but after I went to like a back doctor and got in the weight room, once I came to Georgetown, like everything went pretty well with my back.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm happy to hear that you're healthy, and obviously I couldn't even tell you were injured because you just, like as Ashley mentioned, kicked off the season on a very high note. I want to just talk about your 1K race over the last weekend at the Hokie Invitational. You clocked a 2:18.05,
took down a collegiate record that stood for a week. It was 2:18:10. Let's just talk about the morning and the day. Like, when you got up over the weekend, how were you feeling? And just kind of walk us through that process of how that day started for you and how the race just unfolded.
So basically, I woke up and I went to eat breakfast, and I was feeling kind of nervous. I did get a lot of food, but I only ate like half of it, and I touched like a quarter of my waffle because I was like really nervous, and I sat there contemplating life for like 10 minutes, I think, with my team. And then I went back to my room and I just chilled in my bed, and then I had my shakeout at around like 10, at around 12:40-ish, I think. And then it was just a 10-minute shakeout, and then I did some quick drills after that to get the legs loose. And then after that, I went back to my room and I just sat in my bed for another like couple hours, I think. I got some homework done during that time. And then I got some Chipotle at like 3 o'clock around that time. And then I ate the whole bowl. If you guys want to know the bowl.
Yeah, wait, yeah, I want to know the order. Yes. What's the bowl
Give
order?
Us the D's.
Yeah.
So I got white rice, black beans, chicken, cheese, and corn. It's simple, but like it tastes so good. It's genuinely perfect.
Okay, and so then, that's the secret then. That's the secret.
Honestly, yeah. And then I went back up to my room, and then while I was eating, like, that's when it starts to hit me that I did want to run fast that day. Like, I like, in my mind, I did have the national record in mind if I did come through in 150 through the 800, but I was thinking that if I come through in 150, I would, like, kind of fade and, like, probably, like, run 220-ish. So I was just hoping to go after the school record that day, which is 220.4, I think. And then it really hit me that I was racing in, like, 3 hours, and then I got really nervous. And then I took a nap at around like 3:30 or 3:45, and then it was like an hour nap. I set an alarm for 4:45 because we had to go on the bus at 5 o'clock, and then I woke up and I felt rested, but I still felt nervous. And then we got to the track, and then I don't know what I did when I went to. Oh yeah, I checked in my spikes, then I watched some races, and then we warmed up, and then like during the warm up, I kind of wasn't feeling it. Like, I felt tired and lethargic almost. So I thought that day was going to be like a bad race. I thought I was actually going to fade coming through the 800. And then I kept on warming up, and like, it didn't get better. So I was like, oh man. But like, my strides did feel good, but the energy felt low. But once I got on the line and like raced, I was like, everything was fine. Thankfully.
Wow. Oh, okay. So you were going into the weekend with a mindset of I'm about to drop something fast.
Yeah.
Is that the gist? Okay. Fun fact too. Our producer just messaged us saying that is her exact order at Chipotle. So I feel like that's the key right here.
No way.
She literally just messaged us and was like, it's so funny. That is my exact order from Chipotle. So I think that's just the key. Okay.
That's the key.
So when you crossed that finish line and you saw 2:18:05, did it feel like, did the race feel fast to you? Did it feel like record breaking speed in Tonoda's legs?
The last lap did. Like, we got paced the first three laps, and it was like 27 mid, 26.9, then 28 mid. And like, that felt easy. But I did realize I was falling off the pace on the third lap because my teammate Abel came like alongside me, and he like, obviously he was racing to like win and like be fast, right? So then that told me that I was slowing down. So I knew I had to pick up the pace. And then the fourth lap, I was pushing, but like kind of cruising. And then I realized I wasn't going lactic coming into the last 200. And I actually came through in 150. So I was like, let me just leave everything on the track and like just run a fast last lap. And that I did. And like, I think I mostly felt tired in the last 50 because everything felt fine until the last 50 where I was like really pushing and like struggling kind of.
So So what was that emotion like when you actually see on the board like 218.05? Like, what was the environment like?
I was happy and surprised. Like, at first I was happy, and then as soon as I realized what I actually did, I was surprised, because usually the goals I set in mind like aren't attainable. Like last year I wanted to run like 146 low, but I was injured like twice during the season, so like obviously that didn't happen. But going after the national record, I didn't expect to actually get it. So at first I crossed the line, I saw 218.05, and I was super happy. But then the more I jogged around the track to my teammates, I was like, did I actually just do that? At first I thought the time was fake, but then they said it on the speaker, I think. And then they said 218.06 or zero. I think was it 06 or 05?
I think it was 05.
Yeah, 05.
I'm right. Yeah.
They said it was 218.05 facility record. I guess they didn't know at the time that it was a collegiate record, but in my mind, I knew. And my coach also screamed, "He got the record!" as soon as I like crossed the line. So from that, I knew.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Now, I do have follow-up kind of to that. So I know, you know, we kind of covered you when you were in high school and stuff with mile split. And so we saw you, obviously you were like, you know, one of, if not the top 800 runner last year when you were in high school. So we've seen you run plenty of 800s. How do you have to kind of change your approach when you add on that extra 200 to go for like the full 1,000?
I definitely went out like way slower. And like more controlled, because in every they said my coach said to run it like an 800, but I didn't want to. But like going out fast wasn't obviously an option, because I don't want to go out in like 50 like two and then just fade off in the last 200 when I'm going like completely lactic, or have like weirdly uneven splits like 52, 50 like 58 and then like a 27 or like a 28. That's I don't think that's the way to run like a 1K, but I think I just got out slower and like relied on my strength and how a 150 should feel easy at this point in the season.
I have two follow-up questions. First one, I know, like as Ashley mentioned, we've covered you since you were in high school. We've seen you run the 8. We see you go sub 4 in the mile as a high school athlete. Do you consider a 1K a sprint? Like, where does that kind of fit in with how you like approach it in a way?
That's a great question. I kind of don't. I would say,
okay,
like, I would say it's a really long stride.
Cause I like that answer. I like that. But like, see, if you're,
fair. Yeah,
Liv, for you, I know you would say a 1K is like a run. Because Liv over here thinks a 500 is a run. Like, come on.
It is. Ask any sprinter. It's a run. Anything more than 400 meters is a run.
It's a run.
Everything less is a sprint.
That's interesting, for sure.
Do you think a 500 is a sprint?
Yes. I sprint
the
whole
500. Like, what the heck? Like, it's absolutely a sprint.
No. Yeah. I would not approach a 500 like I would a 4, in my personal opinion. But anyhow, my second follow-up question. I know you just mentioned that you like going for goals that are somewhat unattainable, but I think that's honestly amazing, because it forces you to grow and stretch yourself into another environment. Instead of taking these baby steps, you're like, hey, instead of going, you know, just think of an average person, you know, 151, I'm striving for a 148, right? So what unattainable goals does Tenota have on his bucket list then? What are some of those goals that you're like to stretch for?
By the end of my college campaign, I do want at least, I wouldn't, based off of like this weekend, I wouldn't say this like unattainable per se, but like I do want at least two NCAA titles. I say two and not
more. That is fantastic. I feel like you got that one.
I hope so. I say two and not more, because seasons and races are unpredictable. So like having at least two as having like a good season is like, that I would like. And I do want to go like 145 low indoors by the end of college, and like probably 143 high by the end of college outdoors.
I think those are some solid goals.
Yeah. But this year, I just want to make it to NCAAs at least.
Awesome. I know we hope that we will see you there at NCAAs, that is for sure. Now,
for sure.
Shift gears a little bit. I want to talk for a bit about NIL, because I know you are part of that kind of that first class of athletes, I believe, to sign an NIL deal with New Balance. So take me a little bit through that process and like what that was like, and you know what it means to be a part of the New Balance family in this whole world of NIL.
It does mean a lot, because I did go to a lot of like New Balance sponsored events last year, and my like my first nationals that I went to was New Balance Nationals, and I think that did like running 4:15 there did like help me elevate like my running in the outdoor season to like be more aware of my fitness. And I think like the process for getting it was like, it was kind of simple, because my coach, I think when they were starting it, she mentioned my name. I think, I don't know how exactly it went down per se on her side, but I know on my side, she told me like a week or two after New Balance Nationals. And like when I was in Florida on vacation, and she said that that there's a strong chance that I would get an NIL, and I was like, oh, no way. And I didn't know that it would be like something like as big as this and as large, because I haven't seen like a lot of high school athletes. Well, obviously we haven't seen a lot of high school running athletes get like NILs from New Balance, but like it was just something new to me, so I didn't know how to like respond at the moment. But as soon as everything like got into gear, I realized how big of a deal this was, and I was really like happy that I was one who got the opportunity to like get it in the first like class per se.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think that's great.
Yeah, I'm also kind of curious, like, so obviously, you know, New Balance gives you gear and that stuff you wear, like what else is kind of, you know, part of what you do as part of your deal with New Balance?
I do get some money, and I do get to go to like New Balance sponsored events as like a New Balance ambassador, and I'm there like helping them with things and like talking to people as well.
Awesome. Very cool.
And I do get to run in their gear whenever I run unattached, so that's fun.
Got it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's like, that's such the weird thing when like you have an NIL deal but like your school isn't sponsored, like obviously your jersey like wouldn't be New Balance. Interesting. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just kind of piggybacking on NIL and New Balance, you're probably in the know that like New Balance is, I think, being very generous when it comes to giving these athletes, especially in high school, the opportunity to sign NIL deals. They just dropped a couple of names this past week. Have you guys started feeling like a family almost, especially because I feel like this is just the start in our sport when it comes to NIL at the high school level, especially?
Kind of, yeah, because a lot of the guys that I know that have been getting it, I've like I've raced them and I've had like conversations with them. So it's good to have other runners that I know be a part of the New Balance family that we're like starting.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And go ahead, Ashley. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, so you know, kind of shifting back to, I know we already asked you about some of your unobtainable goals or whatever, you know, that you call them, but I'm just curious, you know, now we got a couple months left of the indoor season and then we'll transition to outdoor. For you, what's kind of the ultimate end goal when it comes to your freshman indoor season and then looking ahead to your freshman outdoor season?
Definitely freshman indoor season. If I do make it to NCAAs, I would like a top five finish. I think I am capable of doing that. That's really like the only goal I have left for the season, other than qualifying for it, of course, hopefully tomorrow. And then outdoor season, I'm looking to run a mile outdoors, because I think I'm in great shape to, of course, I'm in amazing shape to run an eight, but I'm also in great shape to run a mile. So I'm just wondering if I can PR in my first outdoor race come outdoor.
Fantastic. Kind of also just looking ahead, this is an Olympic year, so I feel like everyone's goals are kind of surrounding that. How has that process been for you to kind of train for that? I know it can only, I can only imagine how difficult it's been. And I know you said it was a smooth transition from high school running to collegiate running. For some, it's a huge challenge, but again, you're also navigating the change in workload, constant travel now. So how have you and your coaches just kind of mapped out a plan as you enter this Olympic year? And just what are you kind of striving for? Are you looking to qualify in the eight? Are you looking to qualify in the mile? Just what are your goals surrounding this Olympic year?
I think I'd probably lean towards qualifying for the eight. But the only problem with that is if I do end up qualifying, then like reaching the Olympic standard time would be like very hard, because I'm pretty sure that's 1:44.
Yeah, I think it's pretty quick.
That's I don't think I'll be that fast by the end of freshman outdoor season. But if it does happen, then like we'll see, I guess. But I highly doubt that. But going to trials and getting experience in like qualifying / championship racing is something that I would like to do to have like experience for the future.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to ask you this because I feel like you've done a little bit of everything. I'm going to steal Ash's question. Do you prefer cross country, indoor track, or outdoor track? Which one's your favorite season?
I have to go with outdoor track.
Okay. Why is that?
But like it's complicated though, because indoor, I kind of like the 800 more. But outdoor, I like the mile more.
Actually, I can see why that makes sense. Is it like the? I mean, you're running less laps than the mile outdoors. I feel like sometimes a mile indoors feels so much longer than it really is.
Yeah, and like and getting splits for my like mile during the race is like I see it simpler. Like I know what I'm running per lap, but in like a mile indoors, like I don't know what I'm supposed to be at. To the 600 or 1K or 1400. So like then I'm a little bit confused indoors. I also haven't had like a good mile campaign. Like my senior indoor like kind of wasn't that good. So that's probably why I'm like leaning more to the mile outdoors. But like also that like I don't know, the indoor 800 is also like I don't know. I feel like I just pace it better. I don't know why. But like it just feels a little better. It might be the banked curve.
Probably.
I'm not sure.
It could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Make you feel like you kind of are flying more on the curve. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it's probably that.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, Tanoda, thank you so much for your time today and joining us for the Flow Track podcast. We're super proud of you, super excited. And Ashley and I, crossing our fingers, we're looking forward to seeing you at NCAAs, and we're just wishing you all the best this year.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I just think it's always so good when you get to see the athletes that you saw at that high school level just growing and flourishing you know, at the collegiate level.
Yeah.
It makes my heart so happy. So, anywho, this was such a great weekend, and I feel like we need to kick things off and just talk about Wayne and Kalati, Cooper Tier, as they take on the USA Track and Field Cross Country Championships over the weekend. Ashley, let's break all of this down. Let's talk about the women's field first, because honestly, I know last week we talked and we had questions whether or not Wayne and Kalati was going to toe the line. We're like, man, that's going to be tough coming after that half marathon American record, but Wayne did it. So Ashley, just what were your thoughts on the whole performance that she had?
Yeah, I mean, shoot, I think my takeaway is like, what can Wayne Kalati not do? I mean, she goes a week prior, like you mentioned, she goes and sets the American women's half marathon record in her first ever half marathon, 106.25 in Houston. Then a week later, she travels to Richmond for the cross country championships and she wins this 10K in 32:58, which, I mean, I believe she beat the rest of the field by close to 40 seconds. So, I mean, this was a pretty dominant, this was a pretty dominant effort from Wayne. And I think this just shows the kind of range that she has. You know, she can drop down to that 10K on, you know, the cross country course and put out something special, but then she can also take it all the way up to that half marathon level on the roads and do something crazy. At this point, I'm like, I just want to see her in a marathon. Like, I want to see what she can do. Like, that's, for me, I feel like that's the next step that I want to see from Wayne Colati. But that was just, again, like, I think she's, it's obvious that her fitness is at a very high level right now. And again, she can kind of tackle it all.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just kind of mind blown because there was, I feel like personally just having those back-to-back weekends like she did, it's super challenging. And you're putting in really hard efforts back-to-back, half marathon, and then coming here and putting down a really solid 10K. It's just insane. And I kind of agree. I want to see what she can run a full marathon in now.
I wish we could see her at the Olympic marathon trials. I really wish we could. Like, that's what I want to see. Like, oh, come on. Just like, I wish.
Yeah. And I know there was other great performances. I want to give a huge shout out to Allie Ostrander, just finishing fourth overall. Emma Hurley was second with a 33:35, and then Katie Camarena was third with a 33:40. It's just impressive how all these ladies came together, qualified for, and made it to the world championship, making the world championship team for USA. But Ashley, I felt like the men's side, very interesting. I was kind of looking at the splits and it just seemed like everyone was just kind of, it was more tactical, I felt like, compared to the women's race. Like, Wayne Colati went out there, had a mission. She was pretty much winning that whole entire race. You look at the men's field, back and forth, you know, leaders, but everybody was still right there. But what were some of your takeaways from this men's race?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. Like, pretty much every, there's a lot of guys there right there until about that final 1K where you see Cooper Teare. He kind of tried to separate and put a gap on the field, and he put a 5-second gap on the field, and he takes the win in his first race, I believe, since leaving the Bowerman Track Club. And he takes the win in 29:06.5. So that's a pretty big, I would say that's like very good win considering the, you know, lots of changes going on for Cooper Teare in terms of coaching in that training environment. So for him to then come into this race and take this win, I feel like it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And you touched on it. It was just another thought I had in my mind too. When you go through all those changes during a season, you just don't know how it's going to impact the athlete. And I think Cooper Teare is doing great things, winning it in 26:23. Anthony Rotish was second with a 29:11. And then Ahmad Muhammad was third, 29:12. Again, very tactical race on the guy's side, kind of to be expected, as we've talked about previously over different course races. Like, I'm thinking about NCAAs, right? We saw Parker Valby, Caitlin Toohey doing their thing, and we saw Graham Blings kind of, you know, staying in the mix, winning that title later on. Very tactical across the board. And it seemed like it was a very chilly day also, so I feel like ideally perfect conditions for running this 10K race, and it was just incredible. So we finally have the results in. Fantastic running across the board. Now, I think the biggest, in my personal opinion, I think this really took it to the next level. We saw some altitude runs, sub fours. All right. Let's talk about Nico Young, because I was almost in disbelief. I was like, there's no way. 7,000 feet in altitude, breaking sub four, going 3:57. Ashley, what were your thoughts when you saw 3:57 come across your phone with Nico Young's name next to it?
Yeah, so if you aren't already aware, over the past weekend, Nico Young of NAU ran at altitude in Flagstaff an indoor mile, and he runs 3:57 in the Sky Dome in Flagstaff. Like, that's just unheard of. He becomes the first man to ever break 4 minutes in the mile at altitude, at that 7,000 feet mark. And when you look at the altitude conversion, it converts all the way down to a 3:48.71, which is just, like, insane. Like, I think this just shows, like, dang, like, Nico's at, like, a whole nother fitness level, and it's only January, you know? Like, he's obviously been putting in this work since the end of the cross-country season and now going into indoor. And, again, like, what can he not do? I'm like, all right, like, what's the next step? I mean, I think he's running this weekend, I believe, at the John Thomas Terrier Classic, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess that will be his next step. But, like, that just, I think, is a great, you know, starting point for him as we go through the rest of the season.
It's a great starting point. I feel like Nico is ready. and he's ready to take 2024 and by storm. As we talked with Tonoda, it's an Olympic year. We're about to see some extraordinary things, I feel like, happen at the beginning of the year, because everyone's mindset is like, I got to make this team and I have to put in the effort. And it's very clear that Nico has been putting in the work. And I think he's ready to do something spectacular. And as you mentioned, converts to a 3:48. Incredible. Another athlete to do something amazing. You and I were both texting and watching this live. Hoptim Samuel in Albuquerque clocked a 3:59.12. Again, another race in altitude. Great performance by the New Mexico athlete. So, Ashley, what were your thoughts? Because we were also watching this, as I mentioned, and it looked like he was pushing, and then at one point it looked like he was hanging on, and then at one point it looked like he was putting more effort, and I was just like, oh, please get sub four, please get sub four, and then boom, 3:59, and it was a low one too. So what did you think about Hoptim Samuel's performance in Albuquerque?
Yeah, I mean, we saw Samuel at NCAA Cross Country Championships get second there to Graham Blanks, but like, I mean, this, he obviously showed here, he can get, run something pretty dang fast in the mile. And again, it's all only early in the season, and it was a pretty loaded, you know, it was a solid field. You know, you had some Puma Elite running athletes in this mix as well. Here we have the race video from this meet at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Invitational. And again, I believe this converts down closer to like 3:53, I believe, when you convert it down to like sea level. And again, I think actually this brings up to me an important question and an important point going forward. Like, I feel like kind of the past notion or thought is like, okay, if you're running it's hard to run distance events at altitude, right? Like it is. It's much more challenging. But when you take into account that you can get if you can run fast at altitude and get one of those crazy conversions, like why not do it? Like, I feel like now this may start a trend where we see even more distance athletes going to these events at altitude to try and get those conversions to then qualify specifically for, you know, NCAA indoors, get those qualifying marks, which I think that's kind of interesting.
I am right there with you. I 100% want to see more of that. I feel like, and again, high schoolers are thinking going sub four. And I feel like collegiates also are, you know, they're trying to get as close as they can further away from that 4-minute mark. So how do we stretch ourselves? You know, like Tonoda just talked about stretching himself, really putting in some really big marks that might feel unattainable. So let's just see what happens when you run an altitude. I'm all for it.
I mean, again, that conversion is real nice. That is a real nice conversion.
It's real nice.
I mean, shoot, like Nico Youngs converts to 3:48, which ranks him, I think, as like among some of the top 10 American performances ever in the mile, that conversion time, which again, crazy. And so I think this could start a trend, maybe going into next year, something like that going forward, where we will see more distance athletes potentially, especially maybe in that mile, try to run at altitude.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be something to really strive for and push forward to like accomplishing. I think that's great. Also on the dock, big news drops. The third distance runner makes their commitment that they're going pro. Heard Caitlin Tui. We heard Rooks from BYU. And now Addie Wiley is the third. And after 1 year at being at Huntington University, she's accumulated 7 NAIA titles across the indoor, outdoor, and cross-country seasons, and makes her decision that Paul Doyle is going to be her agent. She turned pro with Adidas, and we're 6 months ahead of the Olympic trials. So, Ashley, does this come as a surprise to you at the moment? Or you're like...
I mean, to be honest, based on the year that she had last year, no, this really doesn't come as much of a surprise to me. You know, she was among one of those top finalists in the 1500 at the USA Track and Field Championships outdoors last year, and she almost made that world team in the 1500. She finished fifth in that race, and so... She's, like you said too, she's also gone 1:57 in the 800, which is a stellar time. So I think this is purposefully done, very strategic. She is trying to make this Olympic team, whether it's the 1500 or the 800 or 5K, who knows? I mean, but I'd guess probably 1500 or 800. I mean, again, she is someone that, I mean, she destroyed everyone at the NAIA level when she was at Huntington. And I think this is just the next step that we were all I'm just waiting for, at least in my opinion.
At this point, after, you know, Rooks, I was like, okay, It is what it is. People are just going to go pro right now, which, you know, do what you think is best. And I feel like Addy has just had an extraordinary career. As you mentioned, 157 in the 800. She's also gone 359 in the 15. Those are number 11 and number 10 all time on the American all time list. So this, she's a stellar athlete. So get after it, do what you need to do, and might as well, you know, get paid for it, because you're running fast times. And she's one of those unique athletes where, as you mentioned, Ashley, she could do the 8 and she can do that 1500. And she's a threat in both events, in my personal opinion. So just got to hang tight. And I'm just looking forward to seeing what she does in, you know, her now professional career, which I think is super spectacular.
Yeah, I think she honestly legit has a very, very legit shot of making that Olympic team. I mean, we saw how she raced last year, and I was very impressed. And so I think she's one of those top American women in the 1500. And if she's now devoting that time to, you know, training full time as a pro, I think that's just good. That could be the X factor for her.
Mm-hmm. Before we dive into the BU entries that we're super excited for this upcoming weekend, Ashley, let's talk about the most impressive moment of the weekend. So much happened. Season debuts. Again, we saw Tenota break the national record in the 1K, but there were so many other things that happened. What was the biggest moment for you and the biggest takeaway?
I think the biggest moment for me was watching Rashida Adeleke run a 60. I mean, we don't see that very often from the 400 meter specialist. She's in her first season running as a pro. She runs 7:15 to win the 60 meter at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Collegiate Invitational. She breaks her own Irish national record in the event. She had previously held it at 7:17, and so she lowers it just a little bit. Liv, I think this is just remarkable, and I think this is to see, again, a 400 meter specialist have that top end speed to run 7:15 in the 60. I think that's really impressive. And to me, that shows where she is currently at. Like, she's obviously been working on that top end speed, that start that can help her in the 400 get out of that blocks, really powerful. So Adeleke, like, dang, like, what a way to open your season.
On top of that, Ashley, she went 22:49 in the 200.
I know. I'm like, which, what a double. Like,
incredible. Incredible.
And I believe that was, she finished second to Julian Alford in that race there. Second fastest time in the world. I believe Julian ran the fastest time in the world currently right now. I mean,
yeah,
I think that shows, I mean, I've always, like, looking back at, like, you know, last year, all these athletes, you know, Rashida, Julian Alford, they were all at UT, part of that really special sprint squad there. I've always been big fans of them. And so now seeing them transition to this pro level, I'm like, man, I'm excited. I'm very excited.
Yeah, same. Let's talk about Julian Alfred, because my brain automatically goes to Milrose. I think Julian Alfred, Dina Asher-Smith, face off. I'm excited because, you know, Dina moved and she's training in Austin now with Julian and, of course, the Longhorn program. I was excited. Okay, my brain right now. Okay, so let me go to Dina Asher-Smith, then I'll move back to Julian, because I was so impressed with Dina Asher-Smith. She broke the British 300-meter record, went 36.77. We kind of saw the same thing happen with Adesha Hodge at the VA Showcase. Like, we know these ladies can run a 200. Let's add an extra 100. Let's see where your strength is right now. And I was so impressed with Dina running a 36.77. Remarkable performance. And then you think about Julian Alfred, as you mentioned, ran that 200, 22.28. Wasted zero time.
Zero.
Ashley.
Zero.
She is here. She is here. The woman is ready to go. And the fact that she is strong right now and fast, oh boy. This makes Milrose even that much more exciting.
I mean,
for the
Coach 60. Flo knows what he's doing. Coach Flo knows what he's doing. And I think that these ladies are going to be among that crew that, you know, when you're going forward to the summer, when you're looking ahead to Paris, they're going to be some of those ones that are favorites for medals, at least in my eyes. And so I think that this is just the very beginning, and we're already seeing glimmers of what's to come. And I'm just, like, super pumped.
All right. A few other highlights I think we should discuss briefly. Jamecia Ford. I feel like every episode we just need to talk about the Gamecock here. 51.60 for a world lead in this 400 meters. We've seen her do couple 300s. She's been running that 4x4, but she finally did it by herself. Her in the blocks in the time, 51.60. Just incredible. Not surprised at this point because we know what she's been doing in that 300. But 51.60 actually just blows your mind.
Yeah,
especially
I think
early too.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's early, and I think you could probably argue that not everyone was expecting her to get off to a start like this. Yeah, you know, in the NCAA ranks as just a true freshman. And the fact that she's not only running, you know, some of the fastest times in the NCAA, but some of the fastest time in the world currently right now, I think that speaks a lot, you know, just in terms of what kind of fitness Jamesia is currently in right now. And so I think this 51.6, like, what else can I say? Based on her 300s, I'm not surprised by the time, but yeah, I think she's definitely going to be someone that people need to have their eyes on when you're looking ahead to the NCAA Indoor Championships.
Absolutely. And just kind of looking into the hurdles, you had Devin Charlton going 7.75 in the 60-meter hurdles for the world lead. Trey Cunningham debuts his season with a 7.47 in the 60-meter hurdles. Casey Lightfoot goes 6 meters in the pole vault. But on top of that, we saw a U20 European record fall in the 200. Let me introduce you to Marek Zawarowski, I think is how you say his name.
Zach
18 years old.
Sorry, go ahead.
What'd you say?
No, I think it's Zakharovsky.
Zakharovsky, thank you. 18 years old, from Poland, goes 20.80. This is the 9th fastest time somewhere in that ballpark in the world right now. That is insane.
Yep.
Absolutely insane. So lots of great performances across the board this weekend, which makes me get even more excited for what is to come at the BU John Thomas Terrier Classic. It is going to be loaded, absolutely loaded. I feel like the energy is going to be through the roof at BU. Ashley, what can we expect in these races to come over the weekend?
I mean, I don't know what to say. I'm just very excited. There's so much happening that I'm like, oh my gosh, who would ever get excited for a 5K like this? I'm super pumped though. We're going to have multiple heats, at least on the men's side, for some very fast 5Ks. You know, looking at some of the headliners, you're going to have Yara Nagoose, Woody Kincaid, and on the women's side, you're going to have Gisette Andrews looking for that Olympic standard. And again, like, it's going to be, it's so loaded that, like, they have to make multiple heats that could, like, both heats could legit be, like, at any given meet, like, an insane heat. If you're looking at how it's going to be broken up, running first in the Scarlet Heat is going to be Nagoose, Joe Klecker, Jordy Beamish, Morgan McDonald, Alan Hacker, Edwin Kurgott. So a lot of pros in there that are going to be working together. And then if you're looking at the white heat, you're going to have Woody Kincaid, also Kai Robinson of Stanford, Nico Young, like we mentioned earlier, Morgan Beatlescomb, Sam Prekel. Like, gosh, like, it's going to be really exciting. I think I'm just really curious. I think I saw that we got some pacing numbers, and that I'm going to have to, maybe Olivia, you talk about this while I pull this up and get to my next point, but what are you excited for some of these 5Ks?
Oh yeah, these 5Ks are loaded. As you mentioned, you talked about the Scarlet Heat, the White Heat. I wish we had Yard Nagoose and Woody Kincaid, if I can make one change, just them also be in the same heat together. Huge fan of Yard Nagoose. He's going to be going after something fast. I'm looking forward to seeing where his fitness level is, and I think he can really drop down a really fast time. Woody Kincaid is the U.S. indoor record holder as well, and, you know, we talked about Nico Young. What now we're going to add, you know, some distance into his legs a little bit after running that mile. I feel like we definitely have seen what he can do at that mile distance at altitude, and now as he goes to BU, he's going to have an opportunity to put something really remarkable down, get that competition that he is striving for. So these 5Ks are going to be all just fire emojis, per usual.
Yes, I, like, looking at this. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. I was asking if you found the.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. I found some of the pacing numbers we got. If you're looking at the top heats for the 5K, so those heats 1 and 2 that I was talking about, we're looking around pacing for 13.05 pace. Yeah, so there's that. And then when you're transitioning to the women's, let's see, you're looking at 14.52, so 8.55 through 3K. That's moving.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that. But so, yeah, men's, that's going to be really interesting. And then If you're looking on the women's side, I think the women's 5K Olympic standard, that's going to be the key. That's what they're trying to hit. They're trying to pace for that 14:52 qualifying mark for Paris. And Andrews is going to be that top girl in that race, running her first ever indoor 5K in 4 years. So, I mean, she's going to be kind of getting a refresh, I guess, at this distance indoors. But hey, BU's kind of the place to do that at. It's a pretty quick track, and she's going to be paced by her OAC teammate Alicia Munson, who she already has the standard. But it's going to be a really solid race.
Yeah, I kind of like how Monson is pacing this, especially since she hit the standard last year at the Diamond League meet in London with a 14:19. And of course, the objective is to get that standard, as you mentioned, 14:52. The thing is about Andrews is she already went 14:43 last May, which is number 7 time on the U.S. all-time list. But her performance came after, or excuse me, before the Olympic qualifying window even opened. So that's why this is such a crucial moment for her to essentially re-qualify. We know she is capable of doing it. It's just now you've got to put it all together during this window timeframe. So that's going to be an exciting one to watch. So look out for the men and the women's 5K. But also, I want to just kind of sprinkle this out there. The women's 800, I'm also looking forward to.
Yeah.
We're going to see Roisin Willis, Juliet Whitaker, and freshman Sophia Grurion, who runs for Harvard. They're at it again, Ashley. We saw them multiple meets during their high school careers go after it in that 800, and here we are again.
Yeah, I feel
Full
like it's
circle.
like you said, it's kind of like reintroducing this high school matchup that now we're going to see for a few years to come. I think at the NCAA level and potentially the pro level as well. Roisin and Juliet,
Yeah.
they're teammates at Stanford. They're obviously incredible 800 meter runners. And then Sophia Grurion, she's a freshman at Harvard. She's also the top seed in the 500, I believe, as well. And they're going to be paced, it looks like 58.5, I think, through 400. Am I correct? I think that's what I found here for the women's 800. So
Okay.
it's gonna be quick. I'm excited.
It's gonna be a good one. Looking forward to it. And Ashley, you are our go-to woman when it comes to all the live events on the calendar
Yes.
this weekend. So, along with the BU meet, are there any other meets that we should stay tuned for?
Yeah, so obviously the highlight of the weekend starting tomorrow will be the BU John Thomas Terrick Classic. You can also watch the Florida Collegiate Invitational in Gainesville, the Bill Clinger Classic, and the New Mexico Team Open. As well as we're gonna have the first leg, I believe, of the World Indoor Tour, which is pretty exciting. So, hey, I feel like we're in the thick of things. Like, things are getting a little spicy on the indoor track. And the great news is you can watch a lot of this stuff on Float Track live.
Yeah, live on FloTrack, which is amazing. So, again, another big weekend in the books, and another big weekend with a chapter one. We're just about to open it. It's about to be an exciting weekend for sure. So, thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode of the FloTrack podcast. Ashley and I are super excited to have you joining us. Please like, subscribe. Also, go to the site to get all the articles, the content that we're going to be grabbing from these meets. It's going to be a really big weekend, but we will see you guys. Yes, Ashley.
I'll plug something. We have
Plug.
Workout Wednesdays are back. Go check out our latest Workout
Yes.
Wednesday with Connor Rands, Clayton Young, and me, and Nico Montañez. So that's exciting as well.
Yes, Workout Wednesdays are about to start rolling through. So shout out to Brian Dybel for all the work that he's been putting into. And we have some big ones that are coming up. Super excited for. So again, once that the news happens, then we'll definitely share it with you guys. So thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week and have a great weekend.